Me, great pleasure to introduce Frank Jones from Sherman Oaks, California.
Thank you. Thanks, Mark.
I'm Frank Jones. I'm an alcoholic. I've watched dummies do that, okay? The mics don't work and people get up here and say, "Hi, I'm Frank Jones, I'm an alcoholic." So I thought I'd get that out of the way before I started doing it. And if Adeline has the most time in the room, she got sober when she was about 2 years old, I guess. And it's good to be here, it's good to be sober. If Alcoholics Anonymous didn't work, I wouldn't be standing here tonight. And I wouldn't be standing here tonight if Barbara hadn't called and harangued the hell out of me either, but... So I want to thank Barbara and her home group for inviting me here to speak, and it was just great getting here. I'm at the airport now in Burbank, and she called me yesterday and says, "What time can I pick you up at the airport?" And I said, "What airport? What city am I going to?" And she said, "You're coming up to Sacramento." And I said, "I don't have that on the calendar." And she said, "I sent you a note." And I went in and looked, and I said, "I don't have any notes." She said, "I spoke to you about a month and a half, 2 months ago." "Ah, I remember." I said, "I'll call you back." So I got my airline ticket, and I'm at Burbank, and I have a lot of patience and tolerance. I don't have a lot of sobriety, but I got a lot of patience and tolerance. And they're putting all the cripples on the airplane first in wheelchairs, and that aggravates the hell out of me. I don't know about you. And I'm not a very kind individual. And then they're putting all the old people on, and I'm thinking, hell, I'm old, you know. And then they're going to put on the handicapped, and I'm handicapped, and I'm not going on yet. And then here's all these families with all these little crying, chinchy kids. And I watch about 50 of them get on the airplane. And so it was just great coming up. And then we got on the plane, and we sit there for 35 minutes because they were late and had to fix some stuff on it. So I was just thrilled flying up here. I was supposed to be in Vegas right now with my new wife, and that we had to cancel that trip. She's thrilled about that. She didn't know what AA was when we got married, and she had never been to an AA meeting, didn't know what it was, and we got married on 12/12 last year. And she come and heard me speak, and she said, "Did they write that out for you? Did you really do that stuff?" I said, "Well, they wrote it out for me. That wasn't me." That's what they want me to say, that to impress the newcomers. And I just told her I had to be here. I had a commitment. She understands, and I'm glad. So, but it is. It's good to be here. And if Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't first in my life, I wouldn't have a life. I have no reason for being an alcoholic. I mean, look at me. I mean, I don't look like an alcoholic. I mean, look at the people sitting next to you. They look like alcoholics, I'm going to tell you that. Because I can see all of you from up here. And... I come from a great family. Mom and Dad were married to each other 50 years, and I was born in Danville, Illinois, and Dad worked on the railroad, and Mom was took care of me and my two brothers, and I just had a great childhood growing up in Danville, and I played Little League Baseball and Pony League, and I played football, basketball, and I run track in high school, and that's not why I'm an alcoholic. I had offers to go to college and play basketball, and you know, that's not why I'm an alcoholic. You know, I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and I did that four-step, and I read it to my sponsor. And we started talking about my defects of character and my shortcomings, and I found out some other things about me. I found out that I'm a liar and a cheat and a thief, and my parents didn't teach me that. I picked that up on my own because that's the easiest way to live. I'm always going to go the lines of the easy resistance, and that didn't make me an alcoholic. But, you know, it's easier to lie than it is to tell the truth. When you tell the truth, it's just out there. You can't change the truth. But if you're a liar, I've been everything from a truck driver, airline pilot, gynecologist, a dentist. I've done it all. See, when you're a liar, you can do those things. And then I cheated because I never wanted to work hard and earn anything because I'm lazy. And then I stole all the time and I'm a thief because I didn't want to stand in line and pay for nothing. And when you leave the store, you got the item and your money. You're a double winner. I like that. So that didn't make me an alcoholic, and I'm not one of those that when I found out and did my inventory that I'm searching for my inner child. and put a little teddy bear in a backpack and walk around the meetings for attention with it. If I ever find my inner child, I will choke the son of a bitch out. It has tormented me for years. And and the other thing that growing up, you know, I wanted to be macho. And I mean, look at me. I look like Mr. Peepers. I had no chance. And I'm afraid of the dark, and I can't tell anybody about that. And I know you guys ain't afraid of the dark. And so that made me feel like a wimp and a wussy. That's how I was before I ever took a drink of alcohol. My first drink was at a party in Danville. It was a hot summer night, and all the guys from the ball team were there. We were with our girlfriends. And my girlfriend brought me over this big iced tea glass full of sloe gin and 7-Up. I didn't know what sloe gin was. I'd never heard of it. But I know it was red, and it had ice in it. I took a sip of that stuff, and it tastes like strawberry Kool-Aid. And that was my drink of choice back then. I love strawberry Kool-Aid, so I chug-lugged that glass of sloe gin and 7-Up down. You know, and nothing happened. I just handed her the glass, asked her if she'd get me another one of them. She brought another one, and I drank that down. And I didn't put on an old wrinkled trench coat and throw a bottle of wine in a paper bag and shoot down to Skid Row. I didn't talk to the school counselors and get advice on what can I do to be an alcoholic. I want to give up my 4th of July weekend and go to Sacramento and speak. There you go. That's what I was thinking back then. But I wasn't drinking for the taste of alcohol or what alcohol was doing to me or for me or anything else. I was drinking for one reason that night and one reason only. All my buddies at that party were drinking. That's why I drank. I drank to fit in with those guys. And those guys were having a great time, and I can't do that. You see, I'm self-centered. And I get embarrassed easy. I'm ego. And so I'm just standing with my arms crossed trying to be macho. And these guys are hugging and munching their girlfriend in the corner, and they're dancing and laughing. And I thought, if I drank like those guys drank, I could do those things. And that's why I drank. And I drank almost a gallon of sloe gin in about 30 minutes. I just kept chug-a-lugging them down. It was good, and I'm having a big time, and nothing happened. And about 20 minutes later, I found out where Sloe Gin got its name. I got drunk as hell. I went into a blackout. I got taken home that night. I passed out. And the next morning when I come to, I'm puking up everything I had eaten and drank that night. My head's pounding, my stomach's upset, and something else is funny. I can't remember how I got home. I had no recollection of how I got home that night. Now, I didn't know back then what a blackout was. I didn't know that normal drinkers don't have blackouts. People with a problem with alcohol have blackouts. I didn't know that. And I thought everybody at that party experienced the same thing I experienced. And I missed 3 days of school without a hangover. I went back to school, and the guys told me about that night. They said I was out there dancing and laughing and funny. And some guy said something, and I punched his ticket. And when they told me about all that stuff, I felt a part of those guys. I felt like I'd fit in. I felt like I'd had a great time. I didn't remember it, but I knew I'd had a great time. And the other thing I got from that night to tonight is I don't drink 7-Up anymore. 7-Up will cause you to throw up everything that you eat. It's bad for you. It will give you a terrible headache. And you'll miss anything you're going to have doing the next couple days if you drink 7-Up. You see, this is the only disease in the world that's killing you, and your head will always blame something else. And I blamed the 7-Up that night. So I have not had 7-Up since that night. Now, I didn't turn into a blazing alcoholic after that and get the shakes in study hall when I didn't drink. I drank when I could get it. When I got it, I got drunk, usually on weekends. And when I got drunk, I have to fight. And I have to fight because I'm full of fear. And the only way to keep you away from me is to be a fighter, and so I'm a fighter. And then I'm a thief, and I steal stuff and give it to you so you'll like me, but don't get too close because I will whip your ass. That's what will happen. So that there's just what's going on, and it's crazy. And then as I get older in school, the fights get worse. I'm getting in trouble, and now I got a committee in my head talking to me. And so about 2 weeks before I'm supposed to graduate and go to this college on a basketball scholarship, my committee's talking to me. And my committee's saying, what if you go to that college and don't make that basketball team and don't get grades good enough to stay on the team? Now, that filled me with fear. I don't want to go to college around all those adults and those big kids and be a wimp and a wussy and not make the team and flunk out and do all that other stuff. I'd already projected all that stuff ahead. And so what happens is I made a keen alcoholic decision. I quit high school. It made sense to me at the time. You can't go to college on a scholarship if you don't graduate high school, so I quit. So I'm out drinking 2 weeks later, and my committee's back and is talking to me, and I got to be macho, and I'm not, and I feel like a wimp. And so I made another keen alcoholic decision. I joined the Marine Corps. If you're a wimp and a wussy and afraid of the dark, going into the Marine Corps is a bad deal. I should have joined the Navy or the Air Force. I didn't know that then. I found that out in sobriety. But I joined the Marine Corps, and I'm on a train getting ready to go up to Chicago to get sworn in. And I'm homesick, and I miss Mom and Dad, and I miss my girlfriend, and the wheels of the train ain't moved yet. And I'm sitting next to a guy in a black leather jacket with a ducktail haircut and long sideburns, and he's going into Marine Corps, and I want to hang out with him in Chicago because that way I'll be with somebody, and it might help me with the fear. And so I want to hang with this dude, so I'm trying to be cool. And he's drinking out of this little brown bottle, and he said, "Hey, do you want a drink of this?" And I said, "Sure," because I want to fit in with him. And so I took that bottle, and I chug-lugged two or three big mouthfuls of it. It was whiskey. Now, I don't know how you drank whiskey at the age of 17, but I'm going to tell you what I did. I sprayed that crap all over the seats in front of me. And I got tears in my eyes. I got whiskey coming out my nose. I can't breathe. This guy's looking at me funny. I'm trying to hang in, and I wiped off my face, handed him that bottle, and I said, "You know, that stuff's pretty good." And he said, "You want another hit?" And I said, "Hell no, I can't even breathe right now." And I drank to fit in. I drank to be a part of. And we went up to Chicago, and we got sworn in, and I ended up down at Marine Corps Recruit Depot San Diego, and I'm going through boot camp, and I'm afraid, and I'm homesick, and I'm in a platoon with all these older guys. They're all 19, 20-year-old, and I learned to put a facade out there and act like what I thought a macho guy should act like. And I got through boot camp, and they put me at Camp Pendleton in 1962, and I was in the infantry, and the Cuban crisis happened, and we went on a convoy down the coast and went through the Panama Canal down there, and I'm scared, and I can't tell anybody about it because I ain't supposed to be afraid. I'm a Marine, and, you know, I got all this fear, and I can't tell nobody, and so nothing happens, and we come back through the Panama Canal, and I went over to the Far East for 13 months, and the first night there, we unpack all our gear, and the guys comes up and said, "Hey, Frank, we're going out and get drunk. You want to go with us?" "Well, yeah, I want to go with you," and so I feel a part of the guys now. I'm going out with the guys in the Ville. So we go out in the Ville that night, and we chipped in our money, and we bought a Typhoon Fifth of sake. It held about 2 gallons. Cost us 75 cents. They're passing that bottle of sake around, and all these macho guys are doing that male bonding thing that guys do. Some of you know it. You're punching each other and hugging and shit, doing push-ups on their knuckles, and, you know, they're macho. And that bottle got to me, and I chug-lugged two or three big mouthfuls of it. And I don't know how you drank sake at the age of 17, but... I sprayed that all over their shoes, and I got sake coming out my nose, and my eyes are watering, and they're laughing and pointing at me, and I hated being humiliated. I hated that feeling of being humiliated, and they're laughing. And I got to tell you that, you know, I just, bottle come around, I chug-a-lug some more, and I puked it up, and I realized something. I realized that if you're going to be an alcoholic, you can't let looking bad bother you. You got to hang in. See, I think that's important. And we hung in, didn't we? I think that's it. And, you know, the bottle kept coming around. I kept drinking, and I finally held enough sake down. And I don't know what alcohol did for you, but this is what alcohol did for me. I drank enough of that sake. I looked at those 5 or 6 other Marines I was drinking with, and I realized something. These guys are punks. What in the hell am I hanging out with these sissies for? I don't need you wimps. I'm out of here. And I went out drinking on my own. And I'm in this bar drinking, shooting pool with another Marine, and he said something evidently I took offense to because I hit him in the face with a pool cue. Now, in the movies, it looked cool, you know, and he's laying there bleeding. Now, I got this stomach. I'm scared, and they're calling the MPs, and I'm going to the brig, and I don't want to go to the brig. I'm 17-year-old. Some of you have been in brig or in jail or prison. I can tell by looking at you, and... it ain't no fun, okay? And I don't want to go at age 17, and so I'm all scared, and I feel bad about hitting him, and he's laying there bleeding. And I run out of that bar down through the alleys in Anoka, and I go in another bar. And I'm sitting there, and I ordered a beer and some shooters, and I started drinking them. And the more of that stuff I drank, something funny happened. That fear went away. I didn't care about going to the brig. I figured if the MPs walked in the door of that bar, they're not going to take me alive. We're going to fight it out right there. And that's what alcohol did for me. It made me bulletproof and invisible. It allowed me to just not care about responsibility. I didn't care about picking a tab up. I didn't care what happened when I drank. I only cared about me. I am the mighty I am. And so I'm sitting there drinking. I'm having a big time now, and I start to brag about hitting that guy with a pool cue. The Marine sat next to me. So it works for me because I don't care about anything when I'm drinking. Then I look down at the end of the bar, and there's a Nissan sitting down there. I'm a sucker for a pretty face. Women have been able to soak me for every dime I've got all my life. And she slid up next to me and asked me to buy her a drink, and I'm a nice guy, so I bought her a drink. And then she started telling me this sad story about her mom that needed surgery. And it just broke my heart. And So I gave her some more money, and her and I trudged the road of Happy Delphi to her hooch. And I'd like to stand here tonight and tell you we had such a great time. She remembers it to this day. Hell, it was over too quick for me to remember it. And, you know, that embarrassed my little chinchy macho attitude and my ego, and I was all ashamed, and I felt like a wimp. And when she went to clean up, I stole my money out of her headboard, and I set her house on fire. That just made sense to me at the time, that's all. I don't know where that came from. I just did that. You know, and I went back to the base and passed out, and the next morning at Reveille, when I come to at Reveille, I'm puking up everything I had eaten drinking a Ville that night. And I'm sicker than a dog, and I can't remember anything that happened. I have no recollection of what went on in the Ville. And so I'm in the head throwing up, and the guys are saying the MPs are looking for who hit that guy with a pool cue. And that fear come back. Now I'm going to the brig, and then they told me about a fire in the Ville. And you see, my father hadn't raised me to act that way. I don't know where those actions came from. I never did that. I never heard my dad raise his voice to my mother. And I was ashamed of that. And I didn't know how I was going to make that right. And so I was scared to death. And I went to my locker and I opened it up. And there's a bottle in there with a big red dot on it. And it says Akadama wine. I took that bottle of wine down. Drank some of it. Didn't throw it up. Drank some more. Went out to formation. By the time that formation was over and I walked back in that barracks, my headache was gone. My stomach settled down. I didn't have a hangover no more. Now, I don't know what that tells you, but what that tells me is if you drink in the morning, you ain't got to be sick. I went right back to my locker, got that bottle of wine out, poured some in a canteen cup, and started drinking it. 20 minutes later, I'm bragging about hitting that guy with a pool cue. I'm bragging about setting that woman's house on fire. When I drank, I don't care. I don't worry about picking a tab up. I'm willing to pick the tab up. I don't care about paying bills. I don't care about respecting anybody. I don't care whose toes I step on. I don't care who I hurt. When I'm drinking, I don't care. It makes everything okay. I became a morning drinker and a daily drinker at the age of 17. All my money went on booze, women in the bars. And I became a bar fighter. And like I said, I'm too light to fight and too thin to win. And I developed the technique of ambush. And we had big glass ashtrays back then and big glass bottles of beer. They were great. And I started getting in trouble. And I'd make a stripe, and they'd take it away from me. And then they'd restrict me to my base. And then they'd restrict me to the barracks. If you'd ever walked up to me over and said, you know what, Jones, every time you drink, you get in trouble, you get drunk, I could have given you reasons why alcohol doesn't have anything to do with it. Alcohol ain't got nothing to do with it. And all you guys sitting out there, and some of you ladies, think of it. Think about this. You're in a bar, and somebody starts fat-mouthing, and you smack them in the mouth with a bottle of beer. Is that your fault? No. They need to learn how to talk right to people. That's their problem. That's how I looked at it. It wasn't my fault. It's his fault. He needs to learn to shut the hell up. He don't talk to me that way. And then the duty NCO would say, Frank, go hit the rack. Shut up. And I'd smack him. Don't tell me to shut up. I wouldn't have hit him if he hadn't told me to shut up. So it ain't my fault. It's his fault. He needs to learn how to talk to people with respect. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I blamed everybody and everything for all the problems I ever had. It's the wife's fault. It's the kid's fault. It's the boss's fault. It's the police's fault. It's the Marine Corps' fault. It was everybody's fault but my fault. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm a victim. And the old-timers snapped me up in my home group and said, look, Slim, if you want to see what the problem is, go look in the mirror. That big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and that program in there is made for you to work, not the people around you. Your wife don't have to work this program. Your kids don't have to work this program. Your boss or anybody around you, you have to work it. You have to become different. You have to change or you ain't going to stick around. I had to learn that in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm responsible for my actions. I'm responsible for all the trouble I get into financially, physically, mentally, emotionally. It's me, nobody else. I had to learn that in Alcoholics Anonymous. What happens is I run out of money to drink on over there, and I perceive that the cab drivers had their meters fixed and were ripping us servicemen off. And anybody who's been overseas knows that. And so I'm going to get some of my money back. And this guy decided to fight about it. And so I beat his face in with a rock. I went to the brig. He almost died. My father flew from the States to Okinawa, paid for that man's surgery, paid for his retirement, gave the cab company money, met with the commanding general. It was 1963. And the only thing we did was just beg the Marine Corps not to throw me out. It's the only thing I knew how to do, and I was 18 years old now. And by the time paperwork went through, whatever deal was cut to get me let loose out of that brig and sent back to duty, I had spent almost a year locked up in that brig. If you'd have told me it was behind drinking, I could have given you reasons why that's not true. Those cab drivers are ripping us off. I'm just getting back my money. That's it. I believed that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and looked at me fearlessly, thoroughly, and honestly. I got out of that brig after 337 days locked up, went to Camp Lejeune, North Carolina, and on my way I went through Illinois and I met a girl that graduated out of high school and married her. Took her to North Carolina with me. She wants me to stay home and be a husband. Not a chance. I'm a bar drinker. I like the intelligent guys and the beautiful women in the bars. And I don't know how you guys would get out of the house, but I'll tell you what I'd do. I'd start a fight with her and make it look like it's her fault. And then we'd be having that cuss fight that alcoholics have with the yelling and screaming and foul language, and now I can't drink in a noisy place. So I got to get the hell out of there. So I get out of there and I go in a bar and I'm drinking in a bar. Some guy will invariably say something that'll upset me or I perceive to be the wrong thing to say, and I'd hit him with a bottle or a glass ashtray, and they'd call the Jacksonville police, and I'd leave that bar and go in another bar, and I'd lock eyes with some honey, and I got to be validated because I don't feel like a man. And if you're like me, that's what guys like me do to be validated. They have to get another woman when they're married or they're in a relationship. And so I'd hook up with some woman in a bar, and we'd go to her place and do what we got to do, and I'm laying there sobering up, and I start to think, and you should never do that when you're drinking. Never think. And what I'm thinking about and the feelings I'm having are the feelings you're going to have when you're a liar and when you're unfaithful and when you're a cheat. And I can't go home and look at that woman now. And so what I do is I stop and have a couple of shooters and a beer. And what my head says is this is just what guys do. This is a guy thing. Don't worry about it. This ain't no big deal. And so I walk in the house and she says, "Where have you been?" Now, I hate that question. Now I got to lie to her. I wouldn't be a liar if she didn't ask that question. So it ain't my fault I'm lying. It's her fault. What the hell's wrong with her? Another cuss fight, back out in the bars. I come into Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is my wife is none of my business. It's not my job to tell her what to do. I'm not her boss. It's not my job to tell her what to cook for dinner. My sponsor told me, if you don't like what your wife cooks for dinner, cook your own damn dinner. But keep your mouth shut about it. Don't say nothing to her. Not my job to tell her how to clean that house. My sponsor told me, if you don't like how that house looks, you clean it yourself. But you're never to talk to her about cleaning that house. You have to take responsibility for your own actions. She's not part of the equation. I had to learn in Alcoholics Anonymous how to be a husband. Then we have a kid. Now, the kids are a damn thing. I can't believe them. They spill things. They make messes. They crap in their diapers. No human should do that. And I can't handle that pressure. And then she'd spill something or do something, and I'd shake her, and I'd throw her in the crib, and the guilt would come over me. I'm a bad father. I know that. The wife and I'd be fighting and cussing. The kid's crying. Now the wife's crying. And I got to get the hell out of there and have a couple of drinks because that's what takes the guilt and shame away of being a bad father. And then I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and what I found out is kids are little people. They're just little people. And that's what they do growing up. They spill things. They break things. They make messes. They want attention. They want this. And what my sponsor told me was to never touch my children unless I'm going to put my arms around them and hug them. He told me to lower my voice in the house and clean up my language and quit using the language at home that I use in the bars. He told me it don't make you macho when you run around firing off the F word around your kids and cussing. It makes you a mental midget trying to express yourself forcibly. And I had to learn to clean my language up around my children because, and I've heard a lot of people in AA walking around, they think it's cute, and they think it's macho and tough to fire off the F word around women and the other young people. And it doesn't show anything. What it shows is their ignorance and their inability to cope with situations, in my opinion. And since I have the dead mic, my opinion's what counts right now. And so I had to clean my language up. And I had to change how I treated my family, and I learned that in Alcoholics Anonymous. Then I got called into the CO's office one day, and he issued me a rifle with a telescope on it, live ammunition, sent me across the ocean to a place called Vietnam. Now, Vietnam ain't my problem, and it's never been my problem, and I get tired of hearing guys whine about that shit 38 years ago. Jerk yourself into 2005, for Christ's sakes. It's over. And I get tired of hearing it down in Southern California. I'm going to tell you what my problem was, and it wasn't Vietnam, it was me. I'm afraid. And I'm over there in 67, 68, I'm up at Quezon, I'm a sniper, and there's a lot of things going on, and I'm full of fear, and I can't tell anybody about that fear because I'm supposed to be a tough guy. And so what I found out was 151 proof rum in my canteens I can drink that and I'm bulletproof and invisible. Now what I can do when I drink is go out on those patrols and show all the other Marines what a tough man I am and do those things that I think I have to do to show everybody what a macho guy I am. And then I'd come back in that harbor site and I'd sit in there and I'd drink out of those canteens and it'd take the guilt and the shame away. And it'd take away those feelings that I had a hard time dealing with. And what alcohol did for me in Vietnam is save my sanity. That's all. Vietnam has never been my problem. I am my problem. I did a lot of bad things to a lot of people over as a result of that, and I'm not proud of that. When I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, what I found out is I can't undo my past. I can't change anything in my past. What I can do is stay sober right now. And if I can put enough nows together, I'll have a sober tonight. That's all. I can't put enough nows together to change anything I've done. What I can do today is try not to treat people the way I used to treat them. Try not to react to every thought that I have or perceived injustice that I witness inflicted on me. What I can learn to do is try to live according to the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not always successful at that. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you I'm wonderful. And I know you can tell I'm not. I am not a very calm, wonderful person. And I've watched old-timers speak in AA, and they get so wonderful. They're walking with God hand in hand. They're about a foot off the ground. They're beautiful to see. I just love watching them because I can't see it anywhere except in AA. And they're just so wonderful. You know, they're never late to work. They never cuss. They never have impure thoughts. They're not greedy. They're not full of love. They're nothing. They're just beautiful. Well, that ain't me. And I got to tell you, I've been sober a little over 24 and a half years. I'm not a good father today because I'm sober 24 and a half years. I'm not a good man today because I'm sober 24 and a half years. What I'm trying to do is be a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous because this is the program that keeps this quiet. This program has not given me a job. It hasn't given me any money. It hasn't found me a main squeeze. It ain't got me a lot of jewelry to wear. It didn't get me a big car to drive. What Alcoholics Anonymous does when I apply it in my life to the best of my ability is a quiet head and a calm stomach. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous gives me. That's why I attend these meetings. That's why I call my sponsor Monday through Friday, because when I hear his voice, I feel better. I can't explain it. I just do. That's why I do those things. I have commitments at my meetings because my sponsor told me, don't just go in there like a lot of old-timers and suck the life out of the meeting and give nothing back. We got enough takers in AA, Frank. Try to give something back. It's saving your life. So I'm not a nice guy today because I'm sober. And I was snapped up and he said, you don't have to be what this group wants you to be. You have to find out who and what you are and be able to accept it and work on it. And he said, in your case, you're an asshole. And I said, well, I got something to work on then, don't I? And he said, you got a bunch to work on. And I'm still working on it. But I still have all the feelings and emotions that I had when I came to AA. And if you're new in here tonight, I want you to know that. I still have anger. I still have lust. I still have greed. I'm still lazier than hell, you know. And if I didn't have to make amends, I'd be a thief and a liar. But that's the two things I won't do. I won't lie and I won't steal because I'll have to make amends. And I don't want to make amends. I got to make enough amends because of this. But I'm not a nice guy because I'm sober. I'm a human being, and it's okay to be human in AA. And all the good and the bad things that's happened to me in sobriety, there's one thing that's never changed, my commitment to this program. I will not compromise my commitment to this program for any person, any amount of money, any job, nothing, period. I will not give up my commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. It keeps my head quiet. I love that. That's why I came here. So what happened was I got wounded over there during the siege at Khe Sanh. I come back to the States. I get out of the hospital. I go home. We'd had a son born to us while we're there. He's on the couch crying. I got my daughter. She's growing up. I got my wife. We're in there drinking. She wants me to stay home. I want to get out in the bars and talk about the war because that's my only claim to fame. And all us Vietnam vets, we want to carry that shit with us forever. So I want to get out there and talk about it, man. And, you know, so we're having a cuss fight right there in the house. And I got to tell you, when I came to AA, I didn't believe in God. I'd done too many bad things to too many people. You people said there's always been a higher power in your life. And when I look back today, I see that. I know that. But that day, I didn't believe in God. And I'm in there and we're cussing. And I finally told her, shut up or I'll kill you. Now, that woman didn't believe me. And I walked in the closet and got the gun out that I left for her when I went to Vietnam. And I walked back in that kitchen and I said, if you don't shut up, I'll kill you. And that woman didn't shut up. And I got my daughter standing between my legs, pulling on me, telling me, don't shoot her mommy. And I'm trying to get the safety off that gun, and it was rusted. And I hit a pin at the base of the receiver. And when that pin come out, I pushed it back in, and it was a firing pin, and the gun off. And a bullet went through my hand and down between my legs where my daughter was standing. And the bullet didn't hit her. And I'm a blessed man for that, because I could have accidentally shot and killed my daughter that day in a drunken rage, because my wife wouldn't do what I was trying to tell her to do, because I'm the boss. Because my ego and my macho attitude puts me there when I drink. Shortly after that, she divorced me. I couldn't believe it. I fired one shot. I shot myself. She took the kids and split. Who the hell's clapping? This is a cold group, Barbara. This is a cold group. She divorced me. She took the kids. I drank over that. Alcohol convinced me I'm a good father. I became a drill instructor down in San Diego, and I stole from the recruits when they left their locker open. I thought it taught them a lesson. I was fighting in the bars in San Diego and carrying a gun, and 2.5 years down there as a drill instructor, I had a keen alcoholic thought. I need to go back to Vietnam. That's where the macho guys are. So I volunteered and went back to Vietnam for a second tour. I was there in 70, 71 this time. I was in the infantry. All I did is repeat my bad actions from the first time, and again, alcohol saved my sanity. This time I got shot up in an ambush. I came back to the States. I've been in the Marine Corps 11 years. Marine Corps wants me to come back after chow. I can't do that. I got to drink now to keep the demons away. So after 11 years active duty, I got out of the Marine Corps. I did what macho guys was doing in Southern California. I became a police officer. And I took alcoholism on the street with me. And I can't tell my partner in that police car there's demons in that alley. If I describe them to him, he'll think I'm crazy. I can't tell him about the fear I feel when I go down there. So before I go to work, I drink. And what drinking does is take that fear away. I'm not afraid of anything when I drink. Now what happens is when you scare me, I get violent. I was a violent police officer in the city I worked in. I'm not proud of that. That's just where alcohol allows me to go. Today, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to go in Chino and Wayside and Tehachapi and some of these institutions once in a while, and I speak in there and I make my amends to those guys, and I tell them what I used to be like. And I tell them what Alcoholics Anonymous is trying to do in my life for me today if I apply these principles in my life. And Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to do that because I can't change any of those things. I got married again. We had a daughter. My wife got pregnant again. I still don't feel like a man. I got to be validated, so I started to have an affair with my partner. My partner's a female now. I just want to clear that up. Doesn't matter what your preference is. Mine's female. I had a female partner. We're having an affair. She found out I got my wife pregnant. She took offense to that, and she shot me. And, what the hell are you laughing at, Dave? And I'm going to tell you what. If you're sitting next to some woman that's laughing and you got a gun in the house, don't do anything wrong. She will cap your ass. So I'm just telling you, it's all fun and games till you get shot. Then it's fun and games being shot. That's all. She shot me in the head. And I thought rather than get gunned down in a police car, I'd resign. And so I did. And I got a real estate license. And if you think money, property, and prestige will fix it for you, if you're an alcoholic of my type, money doesn't fix it. Money doesn't take away alcoholism. Money doesn't take away rage and greed and sloth and all the rest of it. All it does is allow you to do it in a better environment. I made a ton of money in real estate. I bought a brand new Cadillac and paid cash. I bought my wife one and paid cash for that. We put a house on a quarter acre, put a swimming pool in, three-hole putting green. My kids wore designer clothes. I wore diamond pinky rings and gold nugget bracelets. I had a Mr. T starter kit before he was ever on television. And money didn't fix it. At the age of 36, I stood there and I looked around, and everything I'd worked all my life to get was gone. The wife, the kids were gone, the house, the car, the jewelry, the clothes. Everything that I had worked and wanted to be was out of my life. And if you'd have told me that drinking was the problem, I'd have told you it has nothing to do with drinking. This is the only disease in the world that's killing you, and your head will always blame something else. I need another deal. I need a younger woman, bigger car, nicer car, bigger house. It's always something. It's never enough. And I ended up homeless. I ended up on the streets. I ended up passing blood when I went to the bathroom. I got very sick. A woman I had worked real estate with seen me one day. She took me to her house. She cleaned me up. She took me to a doctor. That doctor gave me a physical. When they got the results in, she come and found me and took me back. I sat in that doctor's office, and what he told me that day, he said, Mr. Jones, he said, I got to tell you, he says, you're addicted to alcohol, where heroin addict is to heroin. If you don't stop drinking, you're going to die. He He says, you got cirrhosis of the liver. You got a lung and stomach infection. You got a hole in your throat from vomiting all the time. And those are the things that's going to happen to you if you're living and eating and drinking the way I was doing it. And when he told me I was going to die, what I felt was relief because I was tired. It's busy walking through a lot of people's lives and ruining their life and your own. That's not easy work. And I stood up and I shook that man's hand and I thanked him and I walked out of his office. And the money that woman gave me to eat on that day, I went to a liquor store and bought me a fifth of whiskey and a case of beer. And I drank as hard and as fast as I could. I used to cock my gun and put it in my mouth, and I couldn't pull the trigger. And I thought if drinking was going to kill me, it's a good way to go. So I drank as hard and as fast as I could. And to make a long story short, my parents found out I was dying on the streets and I wouldn't take care of myself, and my parents had me committed. Now, if I could have got out of the restraints, I'd have went home and talked to them about it. Because I hadn't talked to them in about 4 years. I think there was a misunderstanding. And I couldn't get out of those damn restraints. And they had me locked up and strapped down, and they pumped me full of vitamin B and magnesium, the things that help you with the withdrawals and stuff. And some of them I remember and some I don't. I remember some of the cramps and those sweats and seeing the little things that fly around the room and stuff. And after about 10 or 11 days, what they did is unstrap me from that bed, put me in a van, and took me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And when I got there, there was a bunch of losers there just like you. I couldn't believe my eyes when I got there. They're doing the same crap you're doing here tonight. And nothing's changed. You're all out there hugging and shit, kissing and shaking hands and, you know, loving everybody up. And I thought, oh, geez. And you look just like you do tonight. All the ladies got their hair done and they're in clean clothes and their makeup's on right. And the guys got on clean clothes and they all look good. And I thought, you couldn't have possibly have lived the life I've lived if you looked that good. What I did, you see, is I judged you. You see, I didn't know anything about you, but I can already figure you out because I'm a know-it-all. And so what happened was you guys told me, Frank, get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. Come on. I said, I'll rip your throat out. You know, I know you won't. There's too many of us. You ain't ripping anything. Shut up and sit down. They said go to 90 meetings, 90 days. Go to AA if you want to take a drink. Go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. If you want to take a drink, go to AA. I heard that over and over and over. And when I left that meeting, I hated you. And what happened was, is I came back the next night because they brought me and I looked at you and I thought, you people ain't made the money I made. You didn't have the car, the jewelry, the clothes, the women. You didn't have any of that stuff. Look at you. Bunch of losers. And you guys looked at me and said, Frank, you ain't got any of that shit now. You're homeless. Get your coffee, shut up, and sit down. Go to 90 meetings, 90 days. If you want a drink, come to AA. I heard that over and over and over again, and I got to tell you that if you're an alcoholic of my type, and I don't know what type of alcoholics you are, maybe you can just come to one meeting a week or one a month or come to a meeting and not do anything in it and just, you know, just suck the life out of it and leave. Maybe you can do that. Maybe you can still run around and act like you did when you were drinking. I don't know. I can't judge that. I don't know you. But if you're an alcoholic like me, what happened to me might happen to you if you don't plug into this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. If you don't get yourself a sponsor, somebody that's going to get you into the big book. They're not going to sit down and talk to you about your issues. Your issues ain't shit. I'm going to tell you that right now. Your issues will change every 4 or 5 seconds. You'll have a new issue. I get so tired of hearing these cliche words from all these detoxes and stuff. I got an issue. Oh, I'm in a shame spiral. I'll put you in a shame spiral. Let me jerk you up a minute. You're here to save your life and get sober, for Christ's sakes. But if you don't get a commitment at these meetings and start giving something back instead of coming in here and just taking, because if you're like me, you've been a taker all your life. You got to give to get back. Takers are losers. I didn't know that till I came to AA. Unless you start working these steps and going to these meetings and doing these things that you see the other people doing, what happened to me might happen to you. And I'll tell you what happened to me. I walked out of that hospital. I stood out there in that sun and I started crying. And all the things I had done all my life came down and started sitting on my chest. All the things I did as a kid, the shoplifting, the lying to mom and dad, the little nickel and dime crap, things I did in Vietnam when I was a cop, 2 wives, 4 kids, all the crap I had done is choking me out. And I didn't want to take a drink of alcohol. I have not had a desire to take a drink of alcohol in over 24 and a half years. I had a desire to commit suicide. Where do you go when you have no hope? Where do you go when the world's closing in on you? You got no money, no clothes, no job, nobody to go to, nobody to talk to. You don't have a sponsor. You're not going to listen to one anyway because you got all the answers. You're just as macho as hell. You don't need any of us if you're like me because I didn't need a sponsor. I don't need commitments or a higher power or AA. I got a lot of willpower. And I didn't go to meetings. I came back to California, found my wife and kids in Oregon. We moved into a garage in Newhall, California, in a six-acre field. Slept on the floor of that garage. The kids ate out of a styrofoam chest, government cheese and block bologna. Put water on their cereal, and I didn't go to meetings. You see, I'm macho. I'm a tough guy. And I know there's a tough guy sitting in here tonight thinking I'm full of crap. We'll be here when you get back. If you do. We always see the newcomers come in and see them leave, but we don't always see them come back. If everybody stayed that raised their hands as a newcomer at my home group and the meetings I attend, we would have to hold them in Dodger Stadium. The same number of newcomers raise their hand at every meeting, but the meeting doesn't get any larger. They're out there outsmarting us. What happened to me might happen to you. I didn't go to any meetings, and I'm driving a stolen car on the Hollywood freeway with a 45. I'm looking for work. I need some money. And I'm honking at this guy in front of me, and I'm telling him to move over, get out of this lane, and he won't move over. Now, maybe here in Sacramento, it doesn't bother you when people don't drive right on the freeway. It irritates the hell out of me. And I'm telling him to move over, and he don't, and I rear-ended him. And when he went off the freeway and stopped, I stopped. I got out of my car with the gun. I walked up there and put it in and said, if you ever drive that slow again, I'll kill you. I didn't want a bourbon and water that day. I wanted to take that man's life. Where do you go when you get that desperate? Where do you go when your world's closing in on you and there's no light at the end of that tunnel? That's called hope. And if you don't have any hope, you have no chance. And you can't get your hope by yourself if you're like me. 10 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings. I'm standing in Alpha Beta buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. Do you think I'm going to buy my children milk for their cereal? I'm selfish. I'm self-centered. I will always get mine first, and I don't care about you or my kids or anybody around me. Frank is always going to get his first, so I'm buying me Pepsi and cigarettes. It says 10 items or less, cash only. My head's back talking to me, and it said, count that lady's items. She's got 13 items in a 10-item line. Now, up here in Sacramento, that probably don't irritate you. That irritates the hell out of me when I'm not going to meetings. I'm going to tell you that. I'm ready to launch. I'm standing. And I'm a thinker. I don't know if you're a thinker, but I got to analyze everything. Is 12 eggs 12 items? Or is that a dozen eggs or is it 12 items? Think about it. Is 4 apples in a plastic bag, is that apples or 4 more items? Is 2 half gallons of milk, is that milk or just 2 more items? By the time I evaluated this lady's stuff, she had about 30 items. Now I'm ready to launch. What do you do with that anger when you can't back it down? And I'm standing there, I am crazy. And she broke her checkbook out. And I said, you can't write a check in this line. The sign says cash, lady. You can't write that damn check. And she turned and smiled and said, I'll be through in a minute, Sonny. I said, my name ain't Sonny. And I said, I'm not Sonny this minute. I said, you can't write. And when I get angry, I got to touch you. And I grabbed her eggs and milk, and I threw it. I threw her shit as far as I could throw it. I threw it all over the store. Now, that will get 4 large sheriffs called on you. I didn't want a pina colada right then. I didn't want a drink. I wanted to rip her blue wig off. I hated that old broad. Now, that's how I get when I don't drink. That's how I get when I don't go to meetings. That's how I get when I don't have a sponsor to talk to. That's how I get when I haven't made a friend in AA that I can call up and talk to relieve that pressure down. Maybe that won't happen to you. You're a lot tougher than me, baby. Take the chance. You're playing You Bet Your Life. Take the chance. 13 months without a drink of alcohol and no meetings. I'm standing in this office. I'm trying to get a job. I need work. And this guy walks by and he said, hey, Frank, how you doing, bud? I said, that's a personal question. Why are you prying into my private life? And I said, I'll tell you how the hell I'm doing. I don't want anybody else to hear. And I grabbed him by the throat, pulled him on the desk. I started choking him, saying, how in the hell do you think I'm feeling now? I flipped out. Now, that probably won't happen to you. Don't worry about it. It won't happen to you. You're cool. You're macho. I didn't want a rum and coke right then. And I got to tell you how God worked in my life when I didn't believe in God. There was an active member of my home group in that office that day, the only time he'd ever been in there. And these guys pulled my fingers off this guy's throat, and they laid that card down. They said, I know what's wrong with you, but you got to go see him. I can't help you. I'm afraid of you. And they took me back to the garage, and I sat there, and I cried, and I don't remember those days. And Bill told me about them later, and they took my guns and stuff away from me, and I sat there, and I cried. And then they took me down to this man's office, and I sat in his office, and I cried. And what that man told me that day has saved my life and my sanity up to and including tonight. Because this is what he said to me. He said, Frank, he said, you haven't had a drink in over 13 months. He said, right this minute, he said, drinking ain't your problem. He said, what you've got right now is a living problem. And he says, you got to find a living answer to your living problem, pal. And he says, you'll probably find it in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'd never heard that before. He said, if you go to those meetings, there's a group of people that's walked down that path before you got there. Fall in behind them and do the things they're doing. He didn't tell me to bring the body and the mind to follow. If you're new and somebody tells you that, get away from them. They're trying to kill you. I'm going to tell you that. Your mind will never follow you in here. Your mind will stay at the door and think of reasons to get you the hell out of here. If you think you can get this by thinking about it, go home tonight, sit in your garage, think about being a Ford or a Chevy. If you turn into one, come on over to the hotel I'm at. I'll honk your horn. Now, there's a deal. You can't get it. The book says it's an action program. It means you've got to be doing something. He told me I needed to come to these meetings and sit in the front row and listen. He told me to shut up and have respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, don't get up and wander around during the meeting. Everybody's seen you there already. They know you're new. They can tell by looking at you. You don't have to get up to be seen. Sit down, shut up, and have respect for AA. Get a commitment at the meetings. Help clean up or fold the chairs or wash the coffee pots or take the trash out. Don't be like so many old-timers and stuff that come into those meetings, suck the life out of it, and give nothing back. He said, watch the people that are doing the work and hang out with them. The people that get up and run out of the meeting, stay the hell away from them. He told me to take AA seriously. He told me to show up unless there's a death in the family and it's mine. He told me to get a higher power. I said, I don't believe in God. He said, whoever puts the moon out and takes it down in the morning, pray to that person. And I thought, I can do that. Because he said, you don't do it. And I had to learn that. And I came into these meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I sat in the front, and I shut up, and I listened. And I thought I had all the answers. And the more I listened, the more I learned, the more I read that big book, and the more directions I was given to do in AA. It seemed the busier that I stayed in AA, the better my life was outside these rooms. It seemed my mind stayed occupied. And then what happened was you guys told me how to treat my family. And you said, go home and tell your wife and kids you love them. And I said, I don't love them. I don't even know who they are. I sobered up, and there they were. And he says, well, just tell them. And I said, I'll be lying to them, and it's an honest program. They said, hell, you've lied to them 10 years. Go lie to them some more. And so I went home and told my wife and kids I loved them, and I didn't love them. I just said it because you told me to do it, and I kept telling them day after day, week after week. One day I went home and told them I loved them, and something funny happened. I loved them. They had changed. I don't know what program they'd been going to. I had no idea. And what I learned from that evolution is this. It doesn't matter when I'm given direction by my sponsor whether I want to do it or not. It doesn't matter whether I think it'll work or not. It doesn't have to appease me at all. I just got to go do it. And what I found out by doing that is everything I've been told to do, everything without a shadow of a doubt that I've been told to do in Alcoholics Anonymous, when I got through doing it, benefited my life. I have never, ever been told anything in AA to do that's hurt me. And that's in 24 years and 6 months. Maybe some of you people with more time, you've been told stuff to do that hurt you. I have never done anything that's done nothing but benefit my life and help keep this head quiet. That's Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, when we get sober, that doesn't mean everything's going to be wonderful. The IRS is going to find you. I'm telling you that right now. They found me in the middle of a vacant field in Newhall, California. Two federal marshals showed up with a subpoena. I owed them $82,000. I said, you want me to write you a check right now? Or do you want that stolen Oldsmobile sitting there, the 1973 one? But they'll find you. And I had to make arrangements, and I had to make phone calls. And it took me almost 10 years to pay them off because I had a lot of other things to go along with that. And then what happened is that some bad things happen in sobriety when you get sober, because life happens to everybody, people sober and people that ain't even alcoholic. And what happens is you have death in the family. My dad died when I was 9 years sober. And Johnny and Clancy said, go back and support your mom. She was married to him 50 years. Stay out of the equation and just help out. Take yourself out of it. It's not about you. It's about your mother. And I went back and I put my 9-year medallion in his pocket when they lowered him in the ground. See, he's the one that came to Okinawa and tried to save my ass. He's the one that paid for me to go in that hospital. He didn't have insurance. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous and the Amend Step, he and I had a relationship. And I got to see him before he died. And then my brother got sober in my house. And he had 17 years, 10 months. And he got a rare disease and he died. And having a drink wouldn't have changed it, wouldn't have brought him back to life. What I did is come to more meetings, get my strength from you people, get my hope from you people. You keep me centered. I didn't run from AA. I got to more meetings. 4 days later, my mom died. And that's just life, you see. And so I went to more meetings. I stuck my hand out to you. I let a few of my friends know what was going on. And Larry and Johnny and Todd and those guys and you know, and they helped me get through that. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I couldn't have done that alone. You know, that's just how it is. And that's Alcoholics Anonymous. I spent 2.5 years unemployed when I was 14 years sober. I lost everything in sobriety. Everything I'd worked hard to get, all my good credit, everything. Couldn't get a job. And my sponsor said, you ain't filing bankruptcy. You made those bills, you're paying those bills. And I had to make a lot of phone calls. And sometimes I had to call back and make amends. Because I get angry at those people and you know, you can't get blood out of a turnip. And the guy on the other end said, we didn't give the money to a turnip. I said, well, okay, where you at? I'll come down. I'll show you a turnip, you ass. All right, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that. I didn't mean to say it. Yeah, I did. And what happened is I ended up after 2.5 years being unemployed, getting in a profession I never thought about, never wanted to do or give any thought to, and got caught up with my bills, and I'm doing it today, and it's where I met my wife a couple years ago, and then her and I got married, and she's a beautiful woman and a spiritual woman, and she can't believe me. And Clancy says, I hope that she changes you. I hope to hell you don't change her. But you see, I'm a blessed man, because whether it's good or bad that's happening in your life, there's nothing going to happen AA can't help you with. You know, I sponsor a lot of guys, and I'm lucky to do that, because I'm not an easy sponsor. You see, if you got a sponsor, I want you to know how lucky you are. You see, my guys can't date in their first year because they ain't got shit to offer. What are you going to do? Come over? Why don't you come over? I got a couch commitment. You can see me there. How about picking me up? I don't have a car or a job. Can you buy me a cup of coffee? So I don't let my guys date in their first year until they do their inventory and they get plugged into Alcoholics Anonymous and they get a commitment to this program. And they got to go to 7 meetings a week, and they got to have a commitment at all those meetings. And they can't wear shorts to the meetings, and they can't wear tank tops to the meetings, and they can't wear flip-flops to the meetings because they're representing Alcoholics Anonymous. They're not representing their chinchy self. Now, if you think you've got a tough sponsor, why don't you give me a call? Now, I got to tell you this. Out of the 26 guys that I sponsor, they all have jobs that pay them a paycheck, not phone sales. They give them a paycheck. They all have a car with car insurance, because if you ain't got car insurance, give me your keys. Because you can't drive a car unless it's registered and it's got car insurance, because that's what state law says. They all have a place to live. They're all registered to vote unless they're a felon. If they're in a relationship, it's monogamous. They treat their girlfriend or their wife the way they want to be treated. They have commitments at all their meetings. Now, they're not wonderful because they fight and everything else at meetings. They're just like any other human being. But they have a good life. And I don't tell them to do anything I'm not doing. I don't tell them to do anything I haven't done. I have to be at the meetings to make sure they're there. I do have a couple of snitches that will snitch them off. But what I'm telling you is I have a good life and I have a full life. I have a life that's, because of Alcoholics Anonymous, all the other things come after it. And the biggest thing I get out of Alcoholics Anonymous is a relationship with my family. You see, that girl that I almost shot that day in that house in Oceanside, she's an attorney today for a medical corporation in Indianapolis, Indiana. She's got four grandkids, and she named one of those little boys after me. And her and I have a relationship. It's not because I'm a good father, because I'm not. It's a lot, I learned to stay out of her life and let her make her own decisions and support her with what she wanted to do. And she's successful in spite of me, not because of me. And my middle daughter's got a master's degree and teaches fifth grade. And she did that in spite of me, not because of me. I'm not a good father, but we had AA and Al-Anon in the home with those kids growing up. And then my son spent 13 out of 17 years in state prison, and he's a violent, angry alcoholic. And my sponsor told me he's got a God in his life the same as you do. He'll get his program in his God's time, not your God's time. And today he's 4.5 years sober, and he's been out of the joint 8 years. And he's a plumber, and he's doing well, and I'm proud of him. He was at a meeting I spoke at last night. And then my youngest daughter, she graduated San Diego with a bachelor's degree, and she's going to be a veterinarian. And she called me when she graduated and said, "Dad, I don't want to go to school 3 or 4 more years. It took 6 years to get this." I said, "What do you want to do, Beck?" And right now she just finished her first week at LAPD Academy. I almost shit. But I got to tell you, I'm proud of her, and I support her 100%. And God forbid if anybody hurts her on the street, I will hunt them down, and I'll make amends later. And I'll take my son with me. But I love my kids today, and I have a relationship with them, and that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. For the most part today, I act like a human being when I leave meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I can tell you this, whether I act like a human being or not, I take responsibility for my actions. Good or bad, I'm responsible for what happens to me today. I am not God. I make decisions, and then once I make a decision, hardly anybody can ever talk me out of it. But I got a sponsor that's louder than my head. And so I run everything by him. And I'm a blessed man, I got to tell you. Not because of what I wear, not because of what I drive, not because of where I live or who I'm married to. I'm a blessed man because I got what I wanted when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. A quiet head and a calm stomach. And if you're new or used tonight, you don't have to remember anything I've said because it doesn't mean anything to anybody in here. It only means something to me. I need to remember what I used to be like. I need to remember how I found AA. And I need to know what my life is like today, and I got a full, rich life. I woke up this morning in a clean, dry bed that wasn't filled with urine. I took a shower and shaved and put on clean clothes before I came here tonight. When I got to AA, I wasn't taking showers and I wasn't wearing clean clothes. And if that's all I got, I'm overpaid. But if you're new or used tonight, I think the only thing you should remember was read to you. It was out of chapter 5, and that chapter 5 says it all, baby, if you just pick it up and read it. Especially that first line. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thanks.